All right, everybody, and welcome to episode 262 of the 9 Years podcast. I am Nick Draper. I am joined by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. And this week we will be discussing our fantastic 3-1 victory over Oxford United from last Saturday, as well as all the usual features, including a somewhat somber look back 20 years ago this week. We know there's a big anniversary on this weekend. I don't need to go into it now. We'll touch on it later. But let's get straight into the action, Stu, into the fun. Let's tell our listeners that we've already recorded this podcast once. We just forgot to record it. So it does mean that the joke we made about everyone weeing together will not make as much sense now out of context of what came up, which is a shame because I like the mental image of after the game, Mark Robinson getting us all to wee together in the gents. But that story will have to just remain a complete mystery to everyone listening now.
To be fair, it's still a mystery to me how I actually got onto that, if I'm being honest with you. But as you know, I somehow linked the we with Mark Robinson and Oxford.
The reason we got onto that was because we were discussing the win against Oxford, and you mentioned, Stu, about after the game, we were talking about the huddle. The players had a huddle in the middle of the pitch. And we talked about this sort of lap of honour that we're doing and whether or not it's something that's going to be a feature of every game. Or as I suggested, we've done a lap of honour now a couple of times. First game after Bolton, because it was the first game back at Plough Lane in front of fans. The win over Oxford was the first win in front of fans at Plough Lane. So that was a nice moment to mark it. But I was saying, I don't think it's in Mark Robinson's makeup to do this every single game, because like I said, it's always great what you've done, but as soon as you've done that, as soon as you've achieved that thing, it's on to the next one. So we don't want to bask in the glory for too long, because we've got jobs to do and we've got to start thinking as quickly as we can on to the next step. There's no point having a good start to the season if you then let your standards slip for the next few games after that.
Yeah, and what I was saying is, like, you know, Mark Robinson is, you know, Robbo is very keen for us to be we together. That's how I got onto it, wasn't it? You know, in terms of that we interpret it as weing together. It's not, it's that as you know, as a group, we are together on the pitch.
Yes. You
know, if I could bold or, you know, whatever they called around we, then, you know, I would do we, W-E, and not W-E-E. Is that we? I don't know.
Yes, and certainly not WWE, because we get in trouble for that.
Exactly. Yeah, we were just discussing, weren't we, in terms of I think you're spot on. Like, you know, can you continue to do it, especially when you lose 2-0 at home to some team in you know, late November, and it's cold and you all go, isn't it? But I just think he wants that togetherness, and I wouldn't be surprised if he does continue to do it in some format, but I quite like it. But you know what? I like it. I like that sort of mutual appreciation of his appreciation of us as fans, because the support is great, let's be fair. The sound is ridiculous. Like, I think it's that mutual appreciation of each other.
And it was well-deserved after the second-half performance against Oxford, 3 goals, against a team that everyone expects to be fighting up the top of the table this season. We also discussed about the huddle and Darius Charles's input into that, because Mark Robinson and Ashley Bayes walked away. They were applauding the fans, but there was still a huddle going on in the centre of the pitch. I didn't see Rob Tovey. I didn't see Darius Charles. I'm not sure if the players had led that, but you thought Darius may well have led that, and he's an important figure in the dressing room.
Yeah. From memory, from what I heard people saying, Darius was in there. And it went on for a little while, and then Robbo and his team went round to applaud the fans on that side of it. Because we were saying what we discussed before in that podcast, which you didn't listen to. But it wasn't, you know, what did he say at half time, wasn't it? We were sort of saying what was the and I just think, you know, they're adults now. I think they know when their performance hasn't hit the standards. And I think it was, but you know what? I still think it's hard to say that they just dropped off, didn't they? For 15 minutes before half time, they just dropped off the level. And I think that's from the level we've set is so high that when we, I think, do you know what? To get to maintain these results that we're getting, we have to play at a maximum level, don't we? You know, it's like that sort of side of it. And I was saying that actually, I didn't think we could see the goal because I was queuing up for my chips. in the South Stand. Nice chips as well.
Right, I have to unpick right where we were and where we've got to, and navigate where we've done here. So right, so Darius Charles, did we discussed there that Darius Charles is an important influence in the dressing room to perhaps help with a difficult end to the first half where we went 1-0 down, things weren't really going our way, we got very, very sloppy in possession, we looked very nervous in possession, mistakes all over the shop, it was a bizarre period of the game, got through to half-time, 1-0 down, a mistake from Anthony Hartigan caught in possession on the edge of his 18-yard line, and then we were thinking about what happened at half-time to calm everyone down, was Darius involved in that? We can still talk about that, but let's more talk about your chips for a minute, because, right, so we went 1-0 down, Anthony Hartigan caught in possession, Sykes puts the ball in the back of the net, fair enough, good play from him, good pressing, good finish. You didn't see it because you had left early to get chips.
Yeah. So I was really impressed on Saturday. I got into the ground at 1 o'clock, so I opened at one, went down to the pub, fan zone. And you know what? For about the hour and a half, absolutely flew by. It felt, I don't know what you know, so I saw you down there going through on there. But I was just bumping into so many people. It felt like, it's a really impressive, the fan zone, the club have got it spot on. They really have in terms of keeping that sort of King's Meadow theme. But the chips are good. I had a sausage, a battered sausage. A crispy sausage. That sounds even worse. A battered sausage and chips for a fiver. Long queue, I won't lie, very popular. On that, Rob Boyce, who I saw basically queued up for a pizza and queued up, got his pizza and ate it and had finished it before I'd got my chips. Pizza looked good. Do you know that when you queue somewhere and you just think, no, I'm gonna stick it out?
You've waited that long, you're gonna, yeah, I know, yeah, we've all been there, yeah.
But I didn't see a goal, so basically, I heard a cheer thinking that doesn't sound loud enough, and then I could literally see through the gap. The other end, I could see some Oxford fans celebrating and stuff. It's only when I got back. But to be fair, as a queue, it's always funny in the South. So when you queue up, people coming out and going, oh, I can't believe he's made another error. And I'm like, oh, I know that is. Mm-hmm. It never changes.
No. He did get caught napping in possession. But then we talked about half time and bring them in. Hartigan had a bit of a dodgy spell. Will Nightingale had a bit of a dodgy spell in particular. And we thought it wasn't going to be a case of Robbo getting a hairdryer out. He was going to discuss with the players. And we were just thinking, would he obviously have had discussions with individuals, but how much of an input would the players themselves have had at that point, do you think? Because this is something that Robbo's done in the academy in the past.
Yeah, I've seen him do it. And it's incredible he does it. I don't know whether he'd done it, but when I've seen him do it, he literally just gets out the football, I don't know what you call them now, the magnetic pitch, football pitch boards, whatever they're called.
Just like a magnetic whiteboard.
That's it, yeah. Magnetic whiteboard.
Like a tactics board.
Yeah, so that's it. That's what I was looking for, tactics board. I've seen them do it and actually identify where it went wrong, what they can do. I don't have any insight as to what he did. But I could imagine it's a very grown-up conversation because he wants them to recognise when things, because he can't react to everything, tactically teams will change against us because we're doing very well. So he wants them to react, doesn't he? So I would have thought it had been very much a player led, but we were chatting at Darius. I think Darius is a really pivotal part of the management team. And he ain't gonna play, no matter how much he wants to play, I don't think he is. But he does seem to be that it's like the experience. What is Darius? 34 now, maybe? I'm not too sure.
Yeah, let's say that.
Let's be fair, he's like a father figure, isn't he? He hates saying that, but he is. He's that age, some of them. He's got, three players in there at 19. So I think he's a very good buffer. I think he'll be around for ages with us. It's a great fit.
He turns 34 in December. I've just Googled that. Earlier, I Googled Jake Jervis, but we weren't recording. And we discovered that Jake Jervis now plays in Finland. And I made a joke about the fact he wasn't known for being a lover of anything Finnish or being related to Finnish. We all laughed.
No better the second time round.
it's actually worse because I stumbled all over the delivery, but never mind. Talking about stumbling over the delivery, it doesn't even work either because it wasn't delivery, it was the finish. was Oxford striker who went through on goal Holland when Ben Henniger made a fantastic tackle. That's how he got onto Jake Jervis at the time. We were discussing, because he was a substitute, and we were discussing whether Oxford substitutions helped us out a little bit, as well as some other tactical changes. So 1-0 down at halftime, we made a slight formation change in our forward players. Looked like Mabude and Palmer looked like they'd been a front two in the first half. Second half, it looked like Palmer was up alone. Mabude pushed out wide in a 4-2-3-1, and Luke McCormack brought into that central role just behind the striker. And I thought that made a big difference, because I thought it brought McCormack more into the game, and he exerted influence for the time he was on the pitch. And Oxford, whilst we sort of maybe perhaps went and expanded a little bit, added some more width to our game, they seemed to make some changes, made them a little bit more narrow, didn't pay off for them, even though they still managed to get a couple of good chances, of which Holland's was one.
Yeah, and you know, I think the way to combat, and I think quite a few teams do at the moment, is to try and swamp the middle areas, because Alex Woodyard and Andy Hartgan can dominate that midfield. You know, the two in it's in when we talk back. You remember we used to say we think we needed three in the midfield area to because we've always got overrun, didn't we? But actually, with the two, with Woodyard and Andy Hartgan, they're able to control games quite well, and I think that's where Oxford went, probably to swamp the midfield area. They're not alone in that, but the great thing about us is that we're able to adapt. Yeah, you know, we've got players that can play in different positions. So McCormick could play wide of the left, he can play in the support striker, Assal can do the same, can play up as a two, can play in behind, and Radoni we know can play in central midfield or can play wide. We are really you can see now the strength of the squad with Robbo. And even to the extent where, you know, people were saying, like, does he know his best team? Well, he just picks a team that he thinks can win the game. And the tactical battles now are really intriguing. It feels like, you know, like when I always talk about great managers. So, I don't know, when Klopp against Mourinho, or, you know, the battle, isn't it? The battle of wits and the battle of it. It's like Robbo is, I'm not trying to say he's like Klopp, but it's like, he, you know, tactically feels like he's really on it. And to the extent where I think, you know, when we get to 70 minutes at the moment, our fitness levels are ridiculous. But also our subs and our ability to change formation is something that's really giving us that edge. And that's what I think in the end, you know, allowed us to run out 3-1 winners.
Yeah, and finish it with a third goal late on and catch on the break. But there were two massive moments talked about. There was the Holland moment where Ben Henniger made the tackle, last-ditch tackle at 1-1. That could have changed everything. Same, Nick Zanov makes a great save as well at 1-1. And it just shows you these games, big moments in games, they can turn them for you. And we likened it to the Bolton game when, as you pointed out, Zanov made a great save at 3-1.
He's massive for us, isn't he? You know, he got a three-year deal as well this week. And I don't know if you've watched or listened to the Ashley Bayes interview. It's really interesting actually when they sort of say, you know, what has he worked on, and it seems to be that he's worked on his confidence and his mentality. An indicator that, you know, sometimes he might have been rooted to his line, but he's able to read. The irony is, if he were, and this is what you surmise from what Bezo said, if he ever was one that wasn't confident of coming out for balls, like, he comes out to the edge of his area now, doesn't he? Do you know what I mean? Like, he uses the whole of that area, and very pivotal in terms of making angles for us. He plays like sometimes as a sweeper, the old sweeper keeper, isn't it? But he is, you know, with his feet, the amount of attacks that he can set up, and he's so deserving of that 3-year contract. So deserving.
Signed in the week.
And he's earned it. Like I say, you know, the Bolton game, 3-1 down, he made a key save. It's not easy to remember that because there was such momentum, wasn't there? The Ben Henniger, I likened it to Holland being like a little bit of a 92 ground club where he just basically wanted to have a look around the ground. He took so long, like, he took ages. So Ben Henniger should never have had the right to make the tackle. But like all good centre-halves, I think he's been excellent this season already. Is he, you know, he got back as quick as he could and wiped out Holland, the ball and everything. And we've always said sometimes, isn't it, you know, a tackle like that can be as good as a corner or a goal sometimes, isn't it? It just lifts. It was an excellent tackle.
As good as a corner, which brings us on to set pieces. For our little tactical changes, for those big moments we've talked about in our defensive third, set pieces are basically what won us the game, isn't it? That's what's turned it around. The equaliser and then the second goal, more Anthony Hartigan deliveries, carrying on from where he left off at Ipswich the previous week. Will Nightingale both times integral, whereas the week before it was Ben Hennigan on the end of them. Anthony Hartigan is like our David Beckham with these things right now. Everything, as you said earlier, Stu, on a postage stamp.
Yeah, his delivery is just excellent. You know, if you look at the detail, you look at set pieces, lots of games are decided on restarts, they call it now, but they're set pieces, aren't they, in the Elves? And you have to look at Andy Barslow, who, if you haven't listened to it, we interviewed on Sunday Night Live, and it's really interesting. I'm fascinated by I'm very fascinated by tactics and stuff. And it needs everything to come together. It needs, and without Andy Hartigan, the delivery, you know, without that, nothing happens. But the runs, the blocks, the dummy runs, do you know what I mean? All that sort of side of it, it all needs to come into a, it just all needs to happen, doesn't it? It needs to all, if one part doesn't work, it looks rubbish. If one, it's like, you know, we take the short corners and nothing happens. If one part mucks up, it looks absolutely terrible, doesn't it?
It becomes almost laughably bad sometimes.
Yeah, it's like when you work something. You know, do you remember like the Teddy Sheringham corner where he'd always peel to the back stick, wouldn't it, or the front stick? And then, you know, we've tried that. And when it doesn't work, everyone goes, what are you trying? It was rubbish. Well, actually, the idea was there. It's just it all didn't come together, just did it?
The execution, yeah.
Yeah, we've done a lot. Do you know what? The interesting thing is, we seem to overload the back stick a lot at the moment for free kicks, as if like we tried to draw people into, you know, to areas they don't want to be. But, you know, we were talking about Jack Radoni heading the ball in. How funny it would have been if that was offside.
Well, I'm not sure funny would have been the word. But, yes, we talked. This was the equaliser where Will gets up at the back post from the free kick and it seems to be going in without Jack needing to. But, hey, gets himself another goal.
It's one of those, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? I don't know about you, but the first thing I'd done, I was actually in that southwest corner. First thing I look at is the linesman. Like, you just think, like, he's run too early, surely he has. But actually, when you look back on the video, it's just everything. I'll say everything worked. That's when you get an easy header to get you 1-0.
I'm totally shooting the breeze here on this one. When you say look at the linesman for the flag, I was just thinking, actually, I've done that a few occasions this season. I certainly did it for a Sal's equaliser up at Doncaster. I think he probably was offside. But it was just interesting that I have to look. And actually, for Palmer's goal against Gillingham, I had a look as well because I thought it would potentially, but I don't know if there's anything in that. I don't know. We're talking about just players playing right on the shoulder of the last defender, and I guess that's what happens. You sometimes get the run and you get in, and it looks like you're perhaps offside when you aren't. You've just made a well-timed run.
I think, Joe, for the Gillingham goal, I didn't. But I think because I'm down in that corner, you could see that he wasn't. Mm. But from where you are, yeah, you could probably. It's different angles, isn't it?
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever. But you're right. I just got a habit of looking. I think the thing is, right, I think through the years, I've seen so many goals get disallowed. So the Palmer equaliser, he got up early. But you think, is the referee going to give a foul? You know, you just think, I always have to have that confirmation that the referee. Given it, it's like the linesman or the assistant referee, as they're called now, didn't put his flag up. So, yeah, 1-1 and game swung from that, didn't it?
And the third goal, expertly dispatched. We could see when the ball was rolled across it. I think the key word in all of this is composure.
It's just a brilliant finish. If you're going to finish a game off, you know, Oxford were going for the win. Sorry, Oxford going for the equaliser. We don't sit back, do we? We don't sit back. No. And you know what? I was sitting there thinking about the Gillingham game because we didn't kill that game off and we come away with a draw. But this time we kept three players in the sort of attacking bit. Oxford are always going to push people forward, and then we hit on the break. Asal, you know what? I'm like, I'd be honest, I was going like, just back him up. I was like saying in my head, I was going to say, I'll just back him into the area, make him uncomfortable. Because you know what it sounds like? You can shift the ball, get a penalty and stuff like that. Didn't see the run from Radoni. But the finish is just so, it makes it look so easy when we know it isn't that easy.
Mm.
But that's someone of 20 years old making it look ridiculously easy. And it just summed up. It summed up the second half performance. We run out comfortable winners against a very good Oxford team.
But, you know, I think we can play. I still think we can play better. I mean, I think there's still much improvement in that team. And when I say that, I still think it's going to say, right, okay, I'm going to get slaughtered for what I'm about to say. I'm well aware of this because we've scored, what are we? Are we top? No one scored more goals than us in the top four divisions. And okay, we've played a game more than a lot of teams, but it's like 11 goals in the league now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So 11 goals in six games, which is fantastic. We don't actually create many chances. If you look back at the game and think how many clear-cut chances did we actually create against Oxford, against Bolton? Not actually that many, but when they came, like set piece, two goals at Ipswich are set pieces, two goals against Oxford, Ipswich and Doncaster, we had a set piece goal as well, penalty against Bolton. Do you see what I'm saying? It's like,
we
could improve what we do in the final third.
So I suppose your logic is saying that we're probably going to slaughter somebody at some point.
My logic is also thinking there's a little bit of, with the set piece element, there's a little bit of the old school Wimbledon in there.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. And do you know what? Free kick corners and stuff like that, there's nothing better seeing a downward header from Will Nightingale. Yeah, great.
Stu, I'm not going to lie to you, there's quite a lot of things better than that. But in the context of football, fair enough.
But do you know what? It's just, it's in front of the home end. You know, that end is literally like, it's over capacity. I'm not going to lie, it's over capacity.
Oh, massively.
Oh, we've got thunder and lightning.
Yes, yeah. I can hear the rain is coming from outside, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yes, well, it's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah. Well, yes, this is true. This is true.
But yeah, I think, yeah, it's just that, you know, Will Nightingale, yeah, he's a homegrown player, downward header, nothing better than a downward header. Because it all goes in, sort of like, I don't know, it's just picturesque, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And like I say, with the Bodoni finish, it just, you know, gives the home fans an opportunity. And it's so loud. The atmosphere is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
And one other thing we touched on before we move on, we somehow got onto the subject of a BBC Two documentary in Monday nights. It's a four-part documentary, Fever Pitch, The Rise of the Premier League. And it was the first edition of that this Monday, and we talked about Eric Cantona, and Stu talked about his metaphor about him playing football was his ability to paint pictures on the pitch to be able to express himself. And I said,
I made
that link with perhaps our more creative players who are just no pressure on them, just go out, and when you're in those four positions, just do what you want to do.
Yeah, if you look at the team at the moment, Robbo definitely has gone to players like Andy Hargan, Sal, Rodoni, McCormick, there's quite a few actually. Just go to express yourself, you know, in a final third, but do your jobs when you haven't got a ball. You know, you remember he had a moan that someone ran past somebody at Bolton because that shouldn't happen. The work rate should always be there. It's like the givers, isn't it? You know, always expect the women team to work hard, play at a tempo, don't give up. They're the basics, aren't they? But when you've got a ball, go and express yourself. And yeah, you know, Eric Cantona, very creative with his words that he uses, you know, his poems and stuff, but also supposed to be a very good artist as well. And he basically referenced in this first part of the series was that he's basically like when he paints pictures, he just expresses what, you know, he paints perfect goals, I think you said at some point. And we just said how, you know, he's arrogant. He was French, arrogant. That typical French arrogance, that's pretty bad. But
he was French, arrogant, and he was French and arrogant.
Just join it.
It's right, like, it reminds me, I don't know why, it reminds me of The X Factor when they had that awful audition with those two boys doing Mysterious Girl. And they were just like, okay, so who are you? I'm Ant, I'm Seb, and together we are Ant and Seb. He's French, he's arrogant, he's French. He's an arrogant Frenchman.
But it's like, you know, the Man United kits, they had the old Umbro, wasn't it? They had the flappy collars, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think he might have put like old starch on his collars because they always sort of like were like, it's just an arrogance, wasn't it? You know? No, it's an arrogance because like the best players have an arrogance about them, don't they?
Sorry, are you on a bet to see how many times you can say the word arrogant or arrogance in the space of 60 seconds?
If you remember when he come back from that kung fu fighting that he'd done at Sellers Park?
Yes.
He come back and he scored the goal against Sunderland where he chipped. And he just stood there with, like, I think how we got onto that also a little bit of Annie Hartigan's celebration. Yes. Was a little bit similar, not an arrogance, because one, he hasn't got the collars, because we don't have collars on our shirt at the moment. But it was a little bit like, that's what I can do.
We do have collars, but not...
Do we have collars? Well, I can't remember.
Yeah. Every shirt has a collar, surely. This like, just not one that you can lift. Don't,
I was thought... So it's a collar...
Well, I suppose, what do you call the bit on our that's kits at the minute? Sort of like,
the head, isn't it?
Yeah, the opening. They must have, what do you call that bit?
The head opening.
The head opening. Oh, my God, well... That's a lawsuit won't happen.
If you could see us describe, if you could see what we're literally trying to describe what where our head is or where our
where our collars are. Yes, I think we're all aware where our head is. Yes, unless we come from Milton Keynes, where it's clearly shoved right up our ass.
Yeah. Question for our listeners: is a collar only a collar when it's sticking up?
Like, brilliant. Yes, we'll put that to a vote when it's got a flap. God knows we love a flap on this podcast. Right. So anyway, Anthony Hartigan takes the corner, which leads to our second goal for Will Nightingale. But Anthony Hartigan doesn't celebrate. He celebrates in a manner we made equivalent to, or we compared to, Eric Cantona against Sunderland, like you just said.
Yes. Yeah. And because, like I say, I was in that southwest corner. I've got a great season ticket, by the way. Like, it's might be, don't get wrong, it's just such great views. The problem is, though, right, is I do have Steve Adams in front of me. Like, of all the, like, you know, like when you, like, the ground is like full of 9,000 people, well, somewhere 9,000 people. And then you realise that the person who's quite annoying at football is in front of you.
No, George is in a different block.
And then Steve was there. But do you know what? It's actually by being Steve's first experience. And you could just see his, you know, but so, I'm sort of going off topic here, but there's so many people that I know that are around me in that southwest corner who I haven't seen for ages. It just feels like it's like old school Wimbledon. No, we're not in the posh seats where you are on that sort of side of it.
I had a great view of Cole Robinson for the entire game. Well, that's what I can say. It's been great entertainment so far with Evans and Robinson.
What was Everett like then?
It was just, I just find it fascinating because don't forget that was the first game.
Yeah.
So I just find it fascinating the way managers react, and he'd have a little bit of it. He'd be making faces and he'd react to things in a sort of theatrical way. Not in a theatrical way, but he knew he was being watched. So like he'd give a little smile or a little nod or whatever to the crowd when the decision went against him or something like that. So
The thing is, where the West Stand is so good in terms of, you're not far away from the managers, are you? There's not a bad view in that stand.
No.
And Legram, it's quite a lot. It's interesting. I was saying to you, wasn't I, that Aaron Paul was our good friend on the BBC Radio 5, was in the posh hospitality bar. He don't do, we see he doesn't do GA
Let's just guess. So general admission is what GA stands for. General admission is the term used for people that buy tickets just like normal standard tickets in the ground. They don't get hospitality or anything like that. We are the hoi polloi. We are the scum, basically.
Yeah. So Aaron Paul loves Wimbledon, loves, you know, come back with a good friend of his. He does some work on the Mill podcast. Atung, is it? I don't know what they call it.
Yeah. Atung.
Atung, yeah. I got a chance to meet one of the guys who does it. Really nice guy. Knowledgeable about football and stuff like that. And as we sort of said, he did a Twitter thing about how the connection between the players and the team was just so, you could feel it. It was tangible. Do you know what I mean? It was that sort of, you know, and the reason I liked it was because we're biased. We think we've got a lovely stadium and it's loud and there's connection. And he said the sound was just like immense. I think the acoustics we've got as well at that ground is mad, isn't it?
It stays in.
Everyone's saying how loud it is on that. So yeah, we went on to that. But and also Aaron, like I say, he stayed around for ages. Aaron did. He really enjoyed it, and he picked a great game to go. You know, winning against Oxford. Job done. Yeah.
Job done. 3 points. Great start. 1 defeat in 8 in all competitions at the start of the season. So everything looking good so far. We have to wrap this up very, very quickly, Stu. We're running a bit late, but Elsewhere in League One, there was nothing else going on. So we just mentioned that Accrington beat Shrewsbury, and Accrington have won four of the first six. So they're up into second place and they're doing well again, holding their own. So we like to see it. I think lots of people are supporters, like almost like the cliche of everyone's second club. I'm not sure that's true, but there's a lot of fans and a lot of appreciation for what they're doing so far. Yep. So well done, Accrington. Back to a full programme this weekend, this Saturday, and we are travelling up to Morecambe, who are currently 15th, 2 wins, 2 defeats and a draw so far. Before the international break, they beat Sheffield Wednesday, which we mentioned on last week's show, a fine victory, landmark victory for them, really. In their first season at this level, having got promoted in the playoffs, League Two playoffs last season, they beat Newport County at Wembley 1-0. Stu, many years ago, we saw Morecambe get promoted out of the conference in the playoff final at Wembley. They beat Exeter City, if you remember.
Yeah.
Stephen Robinson is their manager. First season in charge, he's taken over from Derek Adams, who got them promoted but then left for Bradford City. Stephen Robinson, previously at Motherwell, I saw him play many times, Stu, at the turn of the millennium for Luton Town. Number 11, played like left wing, left midfield. Won League One with Luton as a player in 2005. And he's got a few of our ex-players, Ryan Delaney, Shane McLaughlin, Shayon Harrison, the former of those two, McLaughlin, Delaney, they're getting game time. But the big threat seems to be Cole Stockton, the centre-forward, who is scoring goals. 4-3-3, tough team to play against. They'll make life difficult. You think we have a little bit more quality?
Yeah, Joe, it's interesting you just saying about the quality thing, because we do... How interesting is it? Like, you know, I'm guilty of this moment about, you know, get the ball down and play. I feel like I'm a little bit of a pampered football fan now, because you're in on the grass, but you know that, you know, that not every game is played that way, and you know, it's basics and stuff like that. I think Morecambe is a really good test for us, because it's going to be an old school game, isn't it? You know, Delaney is massive, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? It's such a shame. I quite like Delaney, if I'm being truthful on that. Yeah, I think Morecambe have got something to fight for. It's really interesting. A lot of them are on 1-year contracts. They've got a lot to prove. Morecambe have got stuff to prove. They've started really well. I'm not going to be arrogant, is it again now, to think that we're going to go up there and outplay them. I think it's a really good test for us. And I think it will tell us what this team is going to be able to do this season. Because I don't know about you, but I'm not looking down. I'm looking up at the moment. So it's a good test to see where we are. I think it's going to be a really good game for us.
Prediction. Go on.
I sort of think a 1-1 draw. I think my head says a 1-1 draw. I think if we played out as a draw, again, I wouldn't be surprised to see us win it.
As we're in League One, Stu, just mention Accrington Stanley, who we've already talked about. They travel to Sunderland. It's a battle of the teams that are currently the top two in League One. So that has to go down as a one to watch. Also interesting to see if Ipswich can get their first win of the season. They host Bolton. That is a difficult fixture.
Have they got one yet still?
No. They were about to, and then we equalised in the 96th minute. Yeah.
It's mad. And Bolton doing really well. Bolton were on TV against Burton also.
Yeah.
Blatant penalty Bolton had late on as well. Blatant.
Did it finish 0-0?
Yeah. You know when a player deliberately drags someone on the blind side of a referee? Blatantly does it. The biggest penalty you would ever see. And I always think to myself, if we had VAR, that would have been a penalty. But
thankfully, it's not made its way down to League One just yet. I am happy to report.
Yes.
We've not got a great deal of time, Stu. I've got the format. We didn't really decide what we wanted to say about the EFL Trophy. If we wanted to say anything whatsoever. So we're all aware, it's not a competition that I take any notice or interest in. When they put B teams into it, we all knew what the plans were. It's an absolutely pointless thing that they've done in doing it for many reasons, and therefore I just decided, no, it's not for me, so I'm not gonna pay attention to it or have anything to do with it. So it's, yeah, that's where I am with it. But we played Portsmouth in it this week at Plough Lane. It's just brought up some conversations. I myself had to point out that the fans were asked by the Dons Trust in 2019 if we wanted to continue with what the policy was at the time, which was to not accept hospitality for these games and not promote these games. We're recording this on the Wednesday night. There is a Meet the Dons Trust Board web... What do they blooming call them now? I forgot what the name is. Forum. Online. Webinar. Thank you. There we go. Webinar on the Thursday night. So a lot of my questions will probably be answered by then. But it's caused a little bit of controversy this week, I think.
Yeah, and I think where I was saying is that the problem, you know, I think in previous years, we've been at King's Meadow and we've done well to hit 500 easily. And I've gone to games. I'm sort of like, I don't agree with B teams, but once we're in it, we're in it. That might be a bit naive. You know, it's been a little bit long. But what I was saying is, you know, we hit, I reckon it was easy 4,500 there last night. We were recording this on Wednesday.
Tuesday night, yeah.
Yeah. Tuesday night? Wednesday night. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. But they, I'll be honest with you, I would say a good 60-70% of those are what I would call class as new fans or casuals. And you can tell that when your teams come out and everyone's taking a picture. You can sort of tell, can't you, that sort of that buzz. And it was like a case they obviously didn't realise what the boycott was. And actually, because it's a new ground, in terms of us, it's a new ground, it's an exciting ground, and Robbo's created such an exciting buzz about everything. Now, I have many of my friends who are going, I want to go, but there's a boycott. But it was that, do you know what I mean? I'm very much that, you know, you make your decision, and I'm quite happy to say I went, and it was a good game of football, you know, but it's a competition I appreciate people don't have any interest in. But it's just a case of now there's money there, and that's the moral thing, isn't it? You know, 4,500, all getting food, although, by the way, there was queues galore in the West Stand because I think we underestimated how many people were going to go.
Sorry, I know this isn't sort of the topic of conversation here, but didn't all tickets have to be bought online in advance?
No, there was actual tickets sold on the night.
Oh, really? Okay.
Right. Yeah, there was tickets. Because it's, and I think they printed them out, and I think they printed about 500, but you could buy tickets on the night on that. So... but yeah, it's just, and I think this really is a little bit of an interesting topic at the moment. It's a bit of a heated conversation, a simple adult conversation. The fact that we've got 4,500, you know, we're supposed to be boycotting this, but actually we've got new fans. We have new fans. And I had one friend who said they were sitting next to someone that hadn't been there since Wembley, the 2000, well, the League Two playoff final. Someone else said they hadn't been to a game of football. Their son loved it. I'm getting another ticket. I made a joke thinking, like, good luck trying to get an out ticket assist.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just that thing, isn't it? It's such a... I don't like this trophy. It always causes this conversation. And you're right, there was that temperature check, wasn't there? Temperature test.
Yes.
The Dons Trust will do it. Yeah. And I think we need to look at it again. We need to have some sort of clear... If we don't want to play it, then that's done anyway.
I think we just had to be careful about where we go with it, because like I say, I'm not saying this is my personal decision not to go to these games and not have anything to do with it, but I'm not saying anyone else should. It's totally what any individual is comfortable with doing. It's just the fact that we had the policy in place with the Dons Trust where they spoke to us and they said, look, here's what we're going to do. We're not going to sell any hospitality. I think we sold hospitality. Well, I know because I saw it advertised on Twitter.
It was sold out.
Yeah, so there we go. We said we weren't going to do that for these games. And we weren't going to promote these games, as it were, aside from the obvious tickets are on sale, for example. I think we've broken those two things. And I mean, hey, look, in the grand scheme of things, whatever people think, it might not be a big deal, but it's more the principle of the thing. If that's what the fans have said, then if what the fans have said can just be discarded just by a click of the fingers, then what other things might be ignored? Do you know what I mean? So we just have to really tighten. There's a process in place that we have to tighten up with. And it just so happens it's been noticed with this fixture in this competition, which causes issues.
You're right, though. You're right. And the thing is, when push comes to shove, this is the moral thing, when push comes to shove of when we need to get, you know, we've got a debt. You know, we know that.
Well, we'd still talk about this. Yeah, 4,500. Yeah.
And also the fact is, when I was looking, because you know, you highlighted the link for that thing, it was back in end of 2019, I think it was. You're right. Those fans at that time said that. But I would like to say, a good 70% of those fans weren't probably fans.
Yeah.
It's that evolving thing, and Plough Lane was always going to do this. I wasn't surprised. I did say, I think I said to you, and I said, I think there'll be a decent crowd. Didn't think there'd be 4,500. I really didn't.
No.
But I did think there'd be a decent crowd because of Plough Lane, new stadium. People can't get into the ground because it was full, excitement, all that sort of thing. And, Robbo went and won 5-3. So even created, those people might be back for the Crystal Palace under 21 game, which is a totally different story because it's a B team, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hey, look, do you know what? I get everyone's stance on it. The competition just causes us issues, doesn't it?
Yes. And I think for the time being, in the words of Stone Cold Steve Austin, that's all I've got to say about that, because I think we... No doubt there'll be more about this, and we'll see. We'll know more on Friday. As you're listening to this, listeners on Friday morning, we might well have had many questions answered by Thomas Rossport.
Yeah, definitely. Night.
So, yeah, could all be moot conversation. On to more happy things. Well, I say happy things, Stu. 20 years ago this week. Let's get these out of the way. So let's get the other bit. Let's get the bits and pieces. So we're looking back to our final season as Wimbledon FC at Selhurst Park before the move to Milton Keynes. And we look back what was going on in the world at that time. So 10th of September 2001, the number one single at the time, Stu, was Mambo Number 5. No, not by whoever it was that actually sang that song about Monica and Rita and whatever, whoever was involved. I don't even know. Whoever else was involved. Paige, Alexa Bliss, Trish Stratus, I don't know. That was by Bob the Builder.
What?
Yes, Bob the Builder, Mambo Number 5, was number one on the 10th of September 2001.
So did he knit the words then? Did he, or was it just a totally different?
They just did it to the song, but I don't know how it went. Parody of it. Yeah.
What's the world coming to?
Well, it's annoying because number two that week was a classic, Starlight by the Supermen Lovers. That was number two, knocked off the number. Yeah. Both new entries, Bob the Builder won. Anyway, the number one film at the box office for that week, Moulin Rouge, a well remembered film with Nicole Kidman and Ewan McGregor. Fulham still use the music from Moulin Rouge as part of their pre-match warm-up routine to get the crowd going. And everyone will know which music I'm talking about at Fulham, that really dramatic, long-running instrumental that goes. And fair play, Fulham. You did a good job there.
Good job.
But good job. The news that week was, of course, 11th of September. Yep. It is the 20-year anniversary of the terrorist attacks in America on Saturday. I did want to briefly talk on this, Stu, because we do have a Wimbledon link here, because we were the only game of football that took place, professional football as far as I'm aware, that took place the following day. So terrorist attacks happened on the 11th of September, Champions League week. Champions League games still went ahead on the 11th of September with a minute's silence, but then out of a mark of respect, they were all cancelled on the 12th of September. If you're struggling with the logic of that one, I think we all are. But anyway, we had a game. We hosted Portsmouth at Selhurst Park, and the game went ahead as normal. It was a very entertaining game, actually. We were 3-0 up midway through the second half. Spectacular goals, I don't know if you remember, from Kevin Cooper and Michael Hughes and David Connolly. But then we threw it away and ended up with a 3-3 draw with, I think, a last-minute penalty, I think, if my memory serves. What are your memories of 11th of September, Stu?
Weird. We have to remember that the time when internet wasn't heavy.
No.
To give you an example, I worked in Croydon, an insurance company, and we didn't have internet access.
Right, yeah.
So the first I heard about it was, if I had a mobile phone. I must have some sort of contact. Yeah, probably was a mobile phone and someone texted me. Because I had some friends that worked in the Canary Wharf at the time, and I was sent home because at that time they weren't too sure where, do you know what I mean? I remember coming home and watching Sky News and just being absolutely, I think, like everyone is. Even if you see it now, I don't think the pictures leave you any less shocked than what you see on it, isn't it? It's the first time that that's happened, and hopefully it's the last time, but... Yeah, really weird. Like I say, it was before the day of social media and stuff. I mean, you wonder now what it would have been like. Do you know what I mean? With events and social media, like the saturation of it, could have been even more scary in terms of people. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I hadn't even thought about that until you mentioned it now, but if it was to happen today, I dread to think the people inside the towers what they would have been filming and putting out there on Twitter or something like that, and what we might have actually seen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was just, I don't know if it was shocking, you know, people jump in to say, it's just like, you can't comprehend it. I've never been to New York, but I know people that have, and they say how big those towers were and stuff like that. But yeah, there's some documentaries on at the moment, isn't there? It's obviously trying to reflect on what people, on what decisions. I think there's actually a documentary that's been on at the moment, which I'm probably going to watch because I think I'm intrigued to see. Everyone can say what decisions were made, but I still remember George Bush being told at a school, wasn't it? Someone went to him in his ear and said, and it's striking how, I want to say he didn't care, but you know, you have an American president and you have a terrorist attack in his country, and he's got to not show weakness, isn't it? And that sort of thing of it. So I'll be interested to watch the documentary just to see, because crikey, that must have been a situation enough to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, there are 2 hour-and-a-half documentaries on BBC, if you've not seen them yet, dedicated to the Stuces there, the one about the reaction to it, and then the one that just detailed the survivors who were involved on the days and still alive today and their stories. But it was, I don't think it's ever really sunk in, to be honest with you. I just remember coming home. I was in sixth form at the time, doing my A-levels. I came home after a day. I logged onto the old Whistler chat site. And that's how I found out, because I hadn't heard any news. But I suppose, I think actually, because it was right at the start of the year as well, we might have actually been let go early that day because sort of induction things or whatever. So hadn't heard anything, got home, logged onto Whistler Chat, saw. I just remember the thread in, if you remember the old Whistler Chat threads, they'd have the first post and they'd trail down from there. And the thread was titled Major Accident in New York City, because the first reaction was it was a complete accident. A plane has somehow managed to crash into it. And then you turn on the TV, and I was BBC News, and I watched it on BBC. And then you're watching live, and the absolute confusion when you saw the second plane. And it was like, wow, is that? And then when the confusion when the towers were falling, and oh, man. Yeah.
And there's also a report there was another one going towards the Pentagon, wasn't there? Or something like that.
And then it went in the Pentagon. And
yeah.
And then the other one, I guess, destined for either the White House or the Capitol building.
I think, do you know what? I think the stuff that came out of that was the fact of the measures at airports. So before that, there wasn't really that strict measures. But if you think about the measures that went into it after that, where you couldn't take, you know, you can take certain things on board, and
it
went up massively, didn't it?
Yeah, but I still think it's one of those sort of misremembered ones as well, because it was even made, like, there was, and people say, oh, the restrictions we have now all because of 9/11, but actually no, it was a few years later when they had the plot with the liquids, and that's when it really stepped up, when you couldn't take certain amounts of anything on board and they all had to be put in separate things and all that business, and they managed to stop that plot from happening.
Yeah. But
I
still get confused now, to be honest. I just don't take anything on there, just so I can't get it thrown away.
Yeah, it's just easier to keep it, everything. Yeah, I make it as simple as possible, I know.
But yeah, but shocking. I think that did turn, that changed things a lot, you know.
Yes.
That is a massive, it's a horrendous thing, but it did change the world of how we viewed it from that point.
On that happy note, we shall bid you farewell, listeners. Thank you very much for listening this week. Updates from the Game of Morecambe will be on Twitter at 9YRS Podcast. Stu, is there anything you'd like to say to finish off?
No. Let's go to Morecambe and, I can't wait. It's so great looking at the playoffs and thinking who we're going to play this time in May. I'm joking. I'm just enjoying it while we can.
Still in September, Stu. Still in September. 40 league games to go. But thank you for joining me this week.
Thank you.
Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last, 2+2, continues to equal just 4, and we will speak to you again next Friday.